referring to the first day of the week. And it's called the Lord's Day because it's the day that the Lord, on which the Lord Jesus Christ rose from the dead. Now, Shabbat means, the word Shabbat means Sabbath. And that, you know, Jesus didn't rest on Sunday. He got up and he was working. He resurrected and he was appearing all over the place, all the churches. You know, well, the churches wasn't, they weren't actually yet churches properly, but he was visiting all kinds of believers all over the place. And he was up and around. He was working. Yeah. Well, festivals. There were three festivals every year when every able-bodied Jewish male was supposed to go to the temple for certain festivals. There was that. But they did walk to, like, you know, their synagogue on Shabbat for, you know, scripture and for prayer and things like this. They did do these things on Shabbat as well, much as they do today. But there's also, like we covered last time, Shabbat has a much more of a family sense than what most Western Christians would think about it as, you know. Now, while Christians will think of like Sabbath, like a Sunday being a family day, it's amazing how we've kind of divorced ourselves even from that idea for Sunday. Glenda? Yeah, I don't think that's accurate. I don't. Who was the source for this? I don't think that's accurate. Now we do know that there was a calendar change somewhere around 400 AD. Okay. No, 400 BC. I'm sorry. There seems to be historical accounts that seem, you know, if you look far enough back in history, every calendar was a lunar calendar, which meant every calendar had 360-day years, all the world round. And so you had the cycle of the moon doing the same thing every month. And every month was equally divided, 30 days every month. And, you know, it was much more consistent than it is for us because we have a 365 point, what is it, 24 something calendar year. What's that? Well, every solar year is actually 365 point something. So we add that extra day every 4 years, and it still doesn't quite keep it in sync, but we've got it, you know. And so it's weird, but that apparently started somewhere around 408 BC. And there's you know, like Chuck Missler is a scientist and a Bible prophecy teacher, and he presents that it was around that time that all of the cultures around the world started trying to figure out how to take care of the extra days to keep the seasons in the right calendar year, you know, in the right time of the calendar. And so different cultures dealt with it a lot of different ways. Sometimes they'd add an extra week. Sometimes they'd add, you know, they had, you know, there was a lot of different ways in different cultures tried to do it. But originally, it was all measured with the moon and the sun. The sun and the moon were in sync, apparently. But when you start taking into account the historical time when, remember when, Joshua went into the promised land and there was a long day? You know, there was a day that lasted about 24 hours. And, you know, we say, oh, God's power is amazing. Yeah, but have you ever thought what that actually did to the earth? What's that? It completely messed up the earth's rotation. And then you have in China, you have a legend of the long night, which interestingly would line up with Joshua's time of the long day, you know. And then you look at Gideon's fleece. No, not Gideon's fleece, but rather, I'm sorry, who was it in with Elisha when the sundial moved back, you know. There is actually a theory that some Bible scholars have with science, you know, that have a scientific bent, and there is a theory that says originally Mars. Well, the theory is that Mars somehow got knocked out of its orbit, so that it was coming within visual sight of the Earth every 104 years. And that when it would, you would have land tidal waves, whereas actually you've got waves, but it's not water, it's land, because of the gravitational pull of Mars. And you know, they would be close enough for men to see with their eyes the moons of Mars, which are now invisible to us. But in history, there's accounts of the two moons of Mars that were surprisingly accurate. But they're invisible to the naked eye. And so there's a whole bunch of very interesting stuff, and if you want to hear about that, I can direct you to a source to get more information on that. But be that as it may, the one thing that is important for you to remember is that when the Bible talks about any dates, any years, as far as prophecy goes, the Bible always reckons a 360-day year. And so that means part of the reason why people get messed up with their prophecy interpretation is because they are not recognizing that God is not using leap years when he talks about a 360-day year. And so there, you gotta deal with it somehow. Anyways, wasn't that fun? Okay. Historically, if you go back far enough, you'll... Oh, in the Bible? Well, you can see it in Daniel, where he says 360 days. When you figure out the math, remember when Gabriel told Daniel 70 weeks of years are appointed for Israel. Do you remember that? Okay, Daniel 70 weeks. Okay, so Daniel 70 weeks. When you figure out the math. The mathematics are 360-day years. And when you go to Revelation and you figure out the mathematics of the Great Tribulation, it's 360-day years. And because Daniel does, he talks about the 70 weeks of years. And what that is 1 week or 7 years is 1 week of years. So there's 70 weeks... That's 490 years total. And Daniel goes on from there in the prophecy with Gabriel tells him, it breaks down specifically to the days. And when you figure out how many days he's listed, 1,200 and so forth, it is 3.5 years exactly to the year if it's a 360-day year. And so when the Bible talks about prophetic ears, especially when it comes to the end times, he's very specific about 360-day years. He doesn't use leap years. Okay. Yes. Okay. So going on here, we read these in question. We're still in our review. Man, I'm taking too long. I'm sorry. That's right. That's right. So, the question then becomes, when we're trying to figure out God's prophecies, do we use the 365 point whatever and try and interpret it that way? Or is somehow God's prophecy ignoring the season shift and still keeping to the 360-day year period? We don't know. Well, there's only 7 years involved, so.
7 years?
Well, what I'm saying is there's only 1 week left of Daniel's 70 years. Let's go back there for just a second. Daniel chapter number 9. No, I'm talking about... Okay, from the start of Genesis... until sometime between Judges and Elisha, sometime in that 500 years or whatever that is, there was a shift in the world's orbit that caused the calendar year in sync with the solar year to lengthen so that there's 5-something days added every year. And so we've had to adjust our calendar. But from the apparently from creation until that time in Joshua's long day, apparently it was still 360-day years. And some people think that it's because of Mars being knocked out of orbit that every 104 years or something like that, it got too close to the Earth, and it caused the Earth's orbit to get messed up. And now they've finally settled into the orbits that they're in now. You know, I don't know when they settled, but they settled in thousands of years ago so that they're not lengthening the days any longer. That's a theory. Okay, I don't know. I'm not an astrophysicist, nor, you know, but that's a theory. No, well, we know for sure that there were times in the Bible where days got messed up. The two that I can think of right now are with Joshua's long day and with the sundial moving. And there might have been one or two others that I don't recall right now. Because that's the way God figures the days. It's just the way he writes it. I don't know. You know, and you know it's still it's like the fact that we've progressed, so now we think of a day as starting with sunrise and ending, you know, day starts at sunrise, you know, but he still counts day as starting with the evening, you know, and so you know it is what it is. But turn to Daniel chapter number. I believe it's 9. See all this stuff that Revelation makes us dance all over the Bible to understand? Okay. So in Daniel chapter number 9, verse number 20, Well, look at verse number 24. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon thy holy city to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring in the everlasting righteousness and to seal up the vision and the prophecy and to anoint the most holy. Therefore know and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks, 80 days, and the street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublous times. And after 80 days shall Messiah be cut off. Now, there's 69 weeks. Now, we don't know why Gabriel splits the 69 weeks in two portions here, but he does. For some reason, maybe Daniel understood it, but it's not clear to us. Gabriel is saying, just to simplify a little bit, there's 70 weeks from the time that the commandment goes forth, that starts the clock. And that from 70 weeks, 490 years, this is when Messiah is going to show up on the 83 years, you know, minus 7 years. So 490 years until Jesus rules on the earth as Messiah. But 1 week, the 69 week, he's going to be cut off. Okay, verse number 26. Okay, let me put it. I wish I had a chalkboard. He says there's a total of 70 weeks, and he's going to make two divisions. He says that from the first division is 80 or 60 to. Yeah, there's 7 weeks and 62 weeks. That's 70 weeks of years is this. It's like saying a dozen years or a decade, okay? Except they're not talking about 10 or they're not talking about 12. They're talking about 7. So when he says 70 weeks of years, he's saying you're going to have 70 groups of 7 years. Okay, that comes out to 490 years. Now, when you read this, at the moment that Jesus presents himself as Messiah, that week he's killed. And that ends the 69 weeks of Daniel. And it puts on hold waiting for the 70th week of Daniel. Okay? So,
for lack of a better graphic illustration, Daniel's about here. Okay? Daniel's about 400 years before Jesus. Somewhere in the right here. And he knows that and the 3.5 years of that tribulation period, the latter half, are the great tribulation.
Okay. Now, did I clear anything up, or is that more muddy? That's because there is another place where it's divided. Okay. I don't know why. Nobody knows. Okay. The only divisions that we understand is why it is it's divided, it's stopped at the 69th week. Because in verse number 26, it says, after 62 weeks, shall Messiah be cut off. Okay. Now, for our numbers, that's really after 69 weeks. Because when you take 62 weeks and add together the weeks from verse 25, that comes to 69. Okay, verse number 25. Look at verse number 25. He says, from the commandment, there is 62 weeks. So that's 69 weeks. Okay. And then there's a division, but he says, after 62 weeks, shall Messiah be cut off. So there's for some reason, God has 7 weeks set aside, and then 62 more weeks. Okay, so there's 49 years that for some reason God sets apart. Those are the seven, and then there's 62 weeks. That's 69, and that's when Messiah's crucified. And then there's one more week, and verse number 27. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice of oblation to cease. That's the midpoint of the tribulation, 3.5 years. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make desolate. Okay. Now, when you add up all the weeks, what you have is 70 total weeks. There's 7 weeks at the end that happen in the tribulation. They're still to come. 69 weeks happened and were done when Jesus rode into Jerusalem. And for some reason, there's a section of 7 weeks at the beginning that God calls 7 weeks, then 62 weeks. So now that's 69, and then one more week that will happen during the tribulation. And right in the middle of the 69 and the 70th, God put the church. Okay? It says what? It is a little confusing. Because what he's saying is that a total of 69 weeks, there'll be Messiah. But for whatever reason, he says 7 weeks, then 62 weeks. And so then he says after those 62 weeks, he's building on that first seven, and we don't know why there's that first seven separated. But it brings us to 69 at Christ. No, it's not another 62. He's referring to the 62 in the last verse. Are the same. Yes, it's the same time period. Okay, so, yeah. I don't know why he separates the first seven. I do know why he separates the last seven. Because those are... No, the last seven are 7 years of... The last week is 7 years. Because each of these weeks is a year, is 7 years. Okay, 7 weeks of years. That's how we started here. So instead of saying a dozen years, or instead of saying, you know, instead of saying a decade, like we might say 10 years, he said, well, it's a week of years, so it's 7 years. Right. You know? L'chaim. Now you're getting into all kinds of Kabbalistic numerology. 18 is, I think, the number of the word chaim, life. That's a numeric number. They count by a lot of things, don't they? They count by 12s. They count by 7s. You know, there's a lot of numbers that they use. But here, God says there's weeks of years. Okay? And so, I'm not sure even how we got on this. Thank you, Hari. Okay, let's at least finish up our... Let's at least finish up our review of last week before we're done this week. Okay, and I am not reviewing last week again next week, okay? Just saying. All right. So question C, why would it be called the Lord's Day, the first day of the week? Because it was the day that Jesus arose. Why does the Bible not call the days of the week Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? And I would argue it's because those names are based on pagan naming of the days. Like Saturday, I know, is related to Saturn, right? And I think Monday has to do with Mars, and I don't know what the other ones are, but they have to do with pagan deities, okay? And then, so question F, what other church verses show us that the church worshipped on the first day of the week? Well, Acts chapter 20, verse 7, and upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them, ready to depart on the morrow, and continued his speech until midnight. And then 1 Corinthians 16, he says, when you are taking up a collection, don't wait until I get there to take up the collection. Lay it aside every Sunday when you guys are meeting together. Okay? He says on the first day of the week here. Okay, so question G. Woo-hoo! We got to a new question, Sister Linda, and I did it just for you. So question G. Are there historical sources that the church met on the first day of the week? Besides these Bible verses, of course. The first one is, let me tell you what these abbreviations here are. IGN, rather, is Ignatius. And I think the MAGN is his letter called Magnesia. It's to the city of Magnesia, if I'm saying that correctly. And 9 is the verse, okay? And he says, Ignatius is, some people said he's the disciple of John the Beloved. So he is an old, old church father, okay? And some say he was a pastor at the church of Antioch. And he said, no longer observing Sabbaths, but fashioning their lives after the Lord's day. So apparently, he was referring to some Christians who didn't even celebrate Sabbath at all anymore, but were just meeting on the Lord's day to worship God. Now, I believe that the Jews, the Jewish believers, were still observing Sabbaths. At least some of them were observing Sabbaths and the Lord's day. We know from Acts, but at that time, Ignatius was observing that some people stopped serving the Lord on Sabbath. And then there's Mileto, the bishop of Sardis. And Sardis is one of the books, or the letters, one of the churches that has a letter written to it here in Revelation. And Mileto wrote this around 170 AD. And he wrote a treatise on the Lord's Day, and how that had come to mean Sunday, the Lord's Day, or the first day of the week had come to be called the Lord's Day. And then you have Dionysius of Corinth around 175 AD, who said in his letter to the Romans, he mentions that the church of the Corinth, is that day keeping the Lord's holy day. And that's recorded for us by Eusebius in his histories of ecclesiology, I think, meaning the history of the church there. Chapter 5 or something, 4, chapter 23 to 11. I don't know how the breakdown goes there, but that's what it is. Question 8. Woohoo, moving right along here. Especially because you didn't have to fill anything out for that last one. I just wrote those down so you'd have a record of them. Okay, question H. Does the Bible ever say that the Lord's Day took the place of the Sabbath? No. Who in here has heard somebody say that Sunday has taken the place of the Sabbath? Or that... Okay, you've heard it from Linda's mom. Okay. Now, what kind of church does she go to? Well, but she's a Methodist, right? They don't say that. No, right. So your mom's just a scapegoat for whatever heresy he wants to talk about? Is that it? No, does she say that, though, Linda? Or do you, so that the Lord's Day is now Sunday, or Sabbath is now the Lord's Day, or... on Sunday because it is the Sabbath. Okay. See, that's an example of what we're talking about. Hey, who else has heard it?
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that is the underlying idea when people call Sunday the Sabbath. That it has now somehow, Saturday is no longer the Sabbath, but in fact Sunday is. No, I don't think that's why. Now, that's true. They didn't want to close it on Saturday, but they did close it on Sunday because the Christian influence on our early American society at least had that much influence to get most businesses shut down on Sunday for a very long time. It's not anymore. No, it's not. But there are still people that do not work or have businesses open on Sunday because they believe it's the Lord's Day. Now, if they do it because they think it's a day of rest, I think they're wrong. But if they do it because they want to honor the Lord's Day, I'm all for it. Who's a business that you know that because of their Christian heritage does not have any... they don't have any work on Sunday. Hobby Lobby? I thought they might, but I wasn't sure about Hobby Lobby. No. Anyone else know one? No, but I'm asking, do we know any businesses that still close on Sunday? Not too many. I know one more. Yeah, Chick-fil-A does. Chick-fil-A, because of their Christian roots, does not have... in fact, who's that guy? Who's that guy that does the videos of kids like? A Tim or something? No, the Christian guy. He does a bunch of videos. He has a song about how Chick-fil-A is... Yeah, Tim Hawkins, if you want to look it up online, it's pretty funny. He does a video where he sings a song about how horrible it is that he can't get Chick-fil-A on Sunday because they're closed on Sunday. It's very funny. Were you thinking of another one, sister? Yeah, you couldn't get anything down there. Well, up until a couple few years ago, The first how many years that I was pastor here, Matador didn't open on Sunday either. And, you know, when I talked to Ray about it, he said, oh, it's because I don't want to give my employees any excuse not to go to church on Sunday, you know. And so they're open now on Sunday, but, you know, yeah. Yeah, they do. They don't open. Yeah, they open later, right. But there are some. Now, question H. Does the Bible ever... Oh, we did that one. Yeah, I think we're going to wrap it up. This whole thing, you know, is a fascinating subject, especially because there are people who make it a huge deal that you're not a Christian if you worship on Sunday. You're a pagan. Listen, there are a lot of pagan concepts that have come into the church that most Christians have no idea of. Now, I'm not going to tell you that you're bound by somebody else's conviction on separating yourself from all paganism. Some people will not celebrate Christmas because it's the winter solstice, which is celebrating a pagan sun god. And so they make a huge deal about it, and they say that any Christian that celebrates Christmas is really separating on that pagan holiday, and it's paganism. Now, God made every day. That day doesn't belong to the sun god any more than Halloween belongs to the devil. God made all those days. And if you in your conscience before God can celebrate Jesus' birth on that day, knowing that it's probably not the day he was born, then go ahead. Just keep it straight, you know? Let the kids know what it's all about. And hey, listen, there's some people that will be offended at doing Christmas on Christmas because it's a fun. You know, you can explain it to them as well as you think you should. But I would suggest that you should, with God's wisdom based on their age, they should know about these issues because they're going to come across some well-meaning Christian who gets all bent out of shape if you call Resurrection Sunday Easter. Well, Easter is really the pagan name for this part of the year. It's not, the word Easter is in the Bible, but it's not referring to Jesus' resurrection. It's referring to the pagan holiday. But see, what you have going on is that the Jews' calendar shifts every year. And because the way they reckon the year, they don't do the same way we do. And so their Passover changes, our Easter changes. I don't know. You know, somebody's sitting up there in some clock tower saying, okay, well, this year I think we'll do it on June 1st. You know, I don't know. I don't know what's the rule. I don't know what's the rules. I don't know how they do it. Yeah. You know, because it's based on something to do, I think, probably with the moon cycles rather than, you know, the actual date. You know, because Thanksgiving's the date. Christmas is the date. I don't know. Yeah. But you probably should be aware of these things just because you'll run into some Christians that freak out about it. Now, that's why we don't put a Christmas tree up here at church. Because there's some people come in here and they say, oh, Christmas tree, paganism, run! You know, they need to relax just a little bit. You know, I don't think it's a sin if somebody decides to have a Christmas tree. If they can do that well-meaning and in faith, that's between them and God, you know? And, you know, I was actually thinking about getting a Christmas tree this year just because I miss the smell. It smelled so nice. We have our Christmas tree. It's a cross, you know, and that's the real tree under which the greatest gift was given. So that's what we do with our... All right. Well, I think in an ideal world, with Christians best representing Christ, I would like to see them celebrate Sabbath with their Jewish brethren because it is the day of rest. And it sets you up for doing the Lord's work on the Lord's day. And so many Christians can't get to church on Sunday because they're too busy living like the world on Saturday. Or even if they are keeping their conscience clear, there's something wrong with spending all your energy on the day of rest, so you can't serve God on the first day of the week. You know? The 2%ers, the 2% Christians? What's that? Used to be. Because the Holy Spirit of God got a hold of you. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I'm glad to see him. You know, maybe, just maybe, you know. All right, well, let's have Brother Justin close us in prayer.